Staying Alive UK. Share your story.
Hello and welcome to the Share Your Story podcast series, a business biography, their story so far. I'm Michael De Groot and I'm your host. My purpose through this podcast series is to inspire you to take the next step towards your new business venture or indeed develop your existing business even further. I only interview business owners who employ less than 9 employees, and mostly they will be on their own. So let's get straight to it. And today I'm delighted to have with us on the podcast Angela Cripps. Angela is an experienced trainer, management consultant, coach, mentor, and performance specialist with over 27 years of experience within the recruitment industry. Her aim is to make companies more successful and profitable through the development of their people and their processes. As a performance and development specialist, she works with SMEs in the recruitment industry or the recruitment teams of large corporations to support them in sustained growth. Angela works internationally, having delivered training in Dubai, Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, Hungary, Poland, Czech Republic, Germany, Ireland and Italy, and of course, the UK. Wow, Angela, you've been all over the world, and welcome to the Share Your Story podcast. How are you?
I'm very well, Michael. Thank you very much. Yes, when you hear a list like that, it does bring it back to you, and I'm looking to do a lot more, so very excited about that.
Oh, so you're obviously somebody who loves traveling.
Definitely. And I'm one of those weird people that actually loves the flight as well. So I've got Australia in a couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to the flight, which people think I'm weird.
You have got the dream job then for you.
Well, I created the job for me. Yes, it was down to me and it's my company. So it makes sense to have it as a dream job. Otherwise, that would be silly, wouldn't it?
Oh, well, I can't wait to hear your story. And we're going to go right back to the beginning, if that's okay with you. So
yes,
to begin with, share a little bit with the audience about your personal life. Things like where you were born, where you lived and how do you... You know, where you now live, a little bit about your family, your hobbies, your interests. So paint a picture about Angela, the human and your journey personally.
OK, well, I seem to have come full circle, actually. I was born in Hemel Hempstead. I've lived in Kent and recently I've lived for 10 years in Derbyshire. But a couple of weeks ago, I've actually moved back to Hemel Hempstead to be near family after 26 years of being away. So
wow.
I'm back where I started. So it is a bit weird, I must admit. And I've been going down a few roads the wrong way. So that's a little bit about Angela, where I think that it will be normal to just turn left into the old high street. And obviously you can't now, apparently. So type of things I'm dealing with.
Hemel has got the famous roundabout, hasn't it?
The magic roundabout, yes. And they've added another roundabout to it since I've been away as well. So it used to be, I think it was 7 roundabouts in one, 6 round the outside, 1 big one in the middle.
Yeah.
Now I believe it's 7 round the outside. So we've got 8 roundabouts all in one.
My God. Well, just very briefly to interject, I used to live in Aylesbury. And I used to commute to London through Hemel Hempstead every single day. So I'm very, very familiar with it.
Yeah, it's great and it works. But if you don't know it's there, you still get people that get onto the roundabout and then just stop. And you can tell they're new because they just put their hands up to their face and they have no idea what they're doing. And mostly if you're from Hemel, then you sort of just give them a bit of space because you know, okay, it's their first time. Let them get used to it.
Yeah. And for our American friends that are listening, they don't know what we're talking about.
Yes, I don't think. It's circle, they tend to call it in some places, don't they?
Yeah, so
8 circles in one place. So
my God.
A little bit confusing,
yeah.
But it does work. It does work. So, yes, so that's my travel as to where I've lived.
Yeah.
I have a daughter that's now 18 and is at university. So hence the reason for me now traveling, because I've always had that travel bug, but I worked very hard during my 20s and didn't get that opportunity to take time out.
Right.
So this is me now going back and doing my gap year, I think, and taking time out and traveling the world, but getting to do a bit of work as I go along as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And what about schooling and education? Where did you do all that?
So I grew up in Hemel Hempstead, went to the Hemel Hempstead School that was the old grammar school, did 10 O-levels, so I'm that last year of O-levels, I'm that old, and then 4 A-levels, and during my A-levels actually had 6 jobs, never even considered going to university. I was always a worker.
Yeah.
I started my first company when I was 10. So me and my best friend, we set up a car cleaning business with business cards as well that we created. Yeah. So it was always, I was always a worker. So yes, at 16, 17, I had 6 jobs as well as doing my A-levels every week, and enjoyed money and actually had 4 holidays a year at that point as well that I was paying for when I was 17. So the travel was always there.
Angela, you were a very young entrepreneur.
Yes, I didn't really see it as that. We just liked money and being able to buy things. But we had regular customers. We did them deals and negotiated if they bought in bulk over every week. So I think we were at 10 years old. I'm quite impressed actually looking back and thinking about it. We were.
That's amazing. That just sounds fantastic. This is a great story. I know how this is going to unfold. So because I was going to ask, how did you find your first job? I mean, you said you had 6 jobs. So do you still remember what those 6 jobs were?
Yes, I had a paper round that joined at 13. I think that was the earliest you could do that. And I was still doing that at 17. I used to work on Wembley Market on a Sunday morning selling watches, but I don't like the cold. So when it got to the winter, I convinced the person that was selling next to us, which was actually a burger van. Mm-hmm. So I convinced them that during the winter I'd work with them. I'd help set up the stall, but I'd work in the burger van because it was lovely and warm. So that was my bit of negotiation at age 15, 16.
Yeah.
I used to work with my mum at 15 at Earls Court and Olympia, actually. I used to go and do demonstrations on stands, and I was there at the Ideal Home exhibition last week, and it really took me back, these people doing these demonstrations. I thought, yes, that was me at 15 doing those as well.
Oh, wow.
So always sales, always an opportunity to try and talk to the public and doing sales. I worked in a newsagent's and a chip shop on the same row as well. So I was doing that 3 days a week as well. And then I did a lottery round. I can't believe that my mum let me do this. I used to walk door to door on a Friday night in the dark at 15, 16, 17 and 18 selling lottery tickets.
Wow.
Now, this is 30 odd years ago now, isn't it? And I guess we're a little bit more aware, but I would never let my daughter do that.
No.
You're walking around with a bag of money and these lottery tickets. I think the prize at the time was £1,000. It was for the local basketball team. So,
yeah,
not too sure about that one now, looking back on it, but the rest of them was all good hard work.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. And then how did it progress from there? What happened and we'll find out how you got into the recruitment industry, but what was the next step?
Yeah. Well, I had a few more years yet actually before I got into recruitment. And I suppose it was spotting an opportunity. There was a gentleman that used to come to the chip shop on a Friday night who drove a BMW 6 Series.
Mm.
And he was probably, I think he was 25 at the time. So I'm 17, 18, looking at this guy drive up with his mobile phone as well that had just come out. Obviously a huge brick thing that was in the car. And I was like, I don't want to be like you, but I do want to drive that car. And I do want to have a mobile phone like that. So I just asked him what he did.
Yeah.
And it turned out he was a self-employed financial consultant.
Right.
So I managed to convince him to get me in front of his boss. I had a few interviews. And at 18, I was, again, going to people's houses, selling mortgages and financial endowment plans. and working evenings, self-employed. So I literally just whatever I made, and I did that for 2 years.
Wow. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yes. My friends that were either taking a year out or had gone to university have obviously had no money, or I think a couple of my friends were working in the bank, and my memory was they were earning 4365. I don't know why the 365 sticks in my head, but that was the salary. That was the average salary then for nearly 4,500 a year.
Yeah.
And that first year I earned 8,500, and it was all tax free because I paid an accountant and didn't pay tax on it through self-employed. So I thought, yeah, this is okay. And I carried on having my four holidays a year.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so you did that for how many
I did
years?
It for 2 years.
2 years.
And during that time, I brought some people in that worked underneath me. So I had a gentleman of 45 that was working underneath me, because that's how the company worked. This is sort of back in the mid-80s, and therefore a little bit of pyramid selling, I would say, at this point. Not that I knew what that was at the time.
No.
So I would get commission on what they sold, and my boss would get commission on what I sold. And I really enjoyed training the people coming in on the documents, filling out the information correctly, making sure that everything was done correctly. And therefore, they sort of spotted that opportunity, this 18, 19-year-old girl that was happy to do all the detail work for nothing.
Yeah.
And started to do that. So I had a team of five under me and did all the training for anyone new coming in. So did that for a period of time, enjoyed the training probably more than I enjoyed the sales in the end, because it was evenings and weekends.
Yes.
And decided that as we'd grown, I believe there were seven of us when we started, and by a year or so later, there was 50 of us.
Whoa.
Yeah. And there was only two women and me. And so I said, I'll be the PA for the regional director. I taught myself to type, taught sort of all my administration skills. So ended up being his PA exec and organising all of his day, as well as really being a secretary to 50 salespeople, which was the tough bit of the job, because they all obviously wanted their work done straight away and everything was urgent.
Yeah.
So did that for about a year. So yes, about 20, actually decided not for me anymore. Let's see what else is out there. And I'd been traveling all that time and commuting as well.
Yes.
So they'd been in three different offices and somewhere over an hour away. So thought let's see what's local and see if I can find a job. So went into a recruitment agency. And after 7 hours of interviews with three different directors, finally got offered a job. I think they thought I was too young to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore kept sort of challenging me during the interviews. One of my favourite memories was the area director, as I walked into the interview, looking at me and said, well, you can't wear that, because I was wearing a trouser suit. And back then, ladies weren't allowed to wear trousers.
Oh.
I know. Doesn't that take you back?
Oh,
so
God.
That was a great start to an interview as I walked in. I thought, this is going well. So decided, okay, let's win a round and work through this. I'm not going to be fazed. And it worked really well. So yes, I remember 7 hours to be a recruitment consultant. I think maybe our industry is missing a little bit of that at the moment. We make it too easy for people to join. They think the job is quite easy. It isn't. So maybe we need to be a bit tougher.
Yeah, I agree. I think 7 hours is good, to be honest.
Yeah.
They really had a good look at you, and in terms of knowing what you could or couldn't do and challenging you. You know, nowadays when people have 45 minutes, an hour's interview, they get offered jobs on the basis of that. It's just not good enough. It's not long enough.
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of assessments as I was going through, putting me on the spot, seeing how I would handle, asking me to negotiate on things. So all the skills that I was going to be needing, they were testing during the interview. So I suppose we have competency-based interviewing now, and we ask about experience and we ask about background and actual evidence.
Yeah.
But maybe we should put an element of that. the assessment days that I run is very much based on that. Let's see what you can do in an environment that's not comfortable. We're not pressurizing you, but it's certainly not comfortable, and we know that. And therefore, if you can do well here, then you'll do well in the job.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Okay. So that sounds. So what did you have to do when you for that agency?
I worked for Blue Arrow, and they were renowned for their training. So I was very lucky that I'd picked them, or they'd picked me. So my first week was 5 days of training, induction training. And I could quite honestly say I must have had in my time with them over 20 courses, because I can picture the different certificates with the list down them. And actually, there's probably up to 30 thinking about it.
Wow, that's amazing in
of
those
training.
Days.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's what they were renowned for. So I was with them for 13 years. And it was ongoing training throughout. And actually thinking about it, the last 3 or 4 years was where I didn't get developed. Mm. And that's one of the key reasons why I left.
Yeah. Okay. And then what next?
So I spent 3 years in that location in Hemel Hempstead, where I was. Then met a gentleman at Essex University and moved down to live with him in Kent. Lived there for 8 years and ran an office there, built a team of, when I took over, it was 2 staff, and I think they were doing about 150,000 turnover, from memory. And then within 2 years, we'd grown that team to 11. We had 0% turnover, which again is very good in recruitment.
Yeah.
And we'd built it up to nearly 3.5 million turnover just in those 2 years.
Wow.
So lots of sales, lots of development. Having the opportunity to use the training that I'd learnt, and the company obviously was still delivering that high level of training. And that was something that I was really interested in. So I'd kept saying to them, I'd like to be a trainer. My first interview with that lady with the trousers said, have you got a training department? That this is something I'm already interested in. They said, actually, yes, we've got an award-winning training department. So we can look at that for the future. And I kept pushing and kept pushing. And because I was young, they said, well, let's wait and see if you're how you do as a manager, because you're going to be training managers and you're only 22, 23 at this point. So if they won't take you seriously is probably what they were trying to say to me.
Yeah.
And I said, OK, I'll be a manager for a year and then can I come into the training department? I did it for 4 years. I loved it because it was so much development of your own staff. That actually it was fantastic, and I'm still in contact with a lot of those staff now, sort of 20 odd years later. We had an amazing time. It was really good, and all did really well. They were all top of their leagues, and we won lots of awards, and really, really positive time. So it was only when I got married down in Kent. I got married and had my reception at Leeds Castle. So if anyone knows Leeds Castle, it's beautiful.
It is.
Really stunning, So I was very lucky to be able to get married there and have my reception there. So my dress was very Anne Boleyn and that style.
Yeah.
So that was very 90s as well, wasn't it? Great big dresses. And then had my daughter. So the day that I found out that I was going to be having my daughter was the day I got offered the job in the training department. So,
oh, God.
I know. Travelled up. I had told them that I was looking to start a family and this would be part of the programme over the next few years. And she said, fine, that's OK. We can work with that.
That's
and she got home and then found out. That I was. So I had to ring her again on the Monday and say, you know, I mentioned it. Well, actually, it
happened.
It's probably happening now.
Really quick.
So, let's work through that. And I think I had 3 months off and then I was back. So out of the 13 odd years that they had me there, they didn't have to leave it for too long.
Mm.
But I was traveling because I really wanted this training job. So although I lived in Kent and lived in Maidstone or Aylesford, a little village outside, I was travelling to Hemel Hempstead, back to my hometown where the head office was, to do the training.
Gosh.
So, yes, M25 every day, 75 miles. Did that whilst I was pregnant and then for the first year of my daughter's life as well. So that was quite a challenge, but was something that I wanted to do. And luckily, my husband at the time worked shifts so we could work it between us, that she wasn't in nursery all the time.
Yeah.
But,
brilliant.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. So did it for a year or so while she was young, and then thought, no, this is silly. Let's move back to Hertfordshire. So moved to a village outside of Hemel this time and commuted in.
Brilliant.
So okay. That takes me up to about 2000 we are now. So we're still a little way away from me starting my own company.
Yes.
And that really was triggered by my daughter starting school. During that time, moved up, unfortunately, my marriage did break down. So I was a single mother with a young daughter who at five was starting school and getting 14 weeks holiday. I was getting five, which was good at the time, not good enough to be able to cover the 14 weeks holiday. No. So this is where I set up Connemara UK, my company. I decided work-life balance was going to be more important. It wasn't about earning the money.
Yeah.
And therefore set up a business where I could work from home the majority of the time. And I set myself the objective of working 5 to 6 days a month. Which is what I did for 10 years. So I worked 5 to 6 days a month. I had every school holiday off. So I had 3 months off a year as well.
Yeah.
Did every school play, even every school trip with my daughter, sort of volunteered and went along with the school and did those, and got to see her grow up and spend a lot of time with her, which was amazing. So 10 years of that until she got to the point where she wasn't as interested in spending as much time with me and was more interested in her friends.
Yes.
And so a couple of years ago, I decided, right, let's start putting some plans together so that once she's gone, I can then carry on with the business and link that to the travelling, which is what I love. So during the recession here in the UK, I did a lot of work in Europe. So Germany, and actually Italy even, was spending money at that time. So did spend there. And I was working with a lady called Fiona Lander, who people in the recruitment industry will know. I spent 10 years working alongside her with her company as an associate. And we got to travel quite a bit with our business. So already picking up opportunities where I could work abroad.
Yes.
And making sure that, obviously my daughter was with her dad at that time. I would go off and do some work and come back.
And do you speak languages, other languages?
No, not really. I did French, German and Latin at school.
Yeah.
So when I worked in Germany, I made sure that I did the introduction in German, explained that I hadn't done German for 30 years and the rest would be in English. That worked really well. But what I did find was people all over the world are so good at English.
Yeah.
It's really not a hindrance for me in my work in any way, shape or form. I adapt to the different cultural changes and are very aware. I'm working sort of APAC at the moment and are very aware of the culture that if you ask someone a question or if they've got it, they'll say yes. And what they're meaning is, yes, I heard you and yes, I heard what you said, but it doesn't mean they actually understand it. So there's few changes and differences and obviously speaking slower than I normally speak now, but it's more about the activities and getting them to do it that then brings it to life and makes them understand as a more sort of activist role. So that tends to work quite well. But yes, once I'd got the bug again for a bit of travelling through Europe during the recession, coming back to the UK here and then actually, working a little bit harder the last few years until my daughter's gone to university. So she's now self-sufficient herself and a very independent young lady. I get to pick and choose where I work and when I work and make sure that I'm home when she's off and back home as well. So works very well.
Fabulous. So, okay, so Connemara. So I did read a little bit about this on your blog, but explain to the listeners then, how did the name come about? It's an unusual name and what does it mean for you?
Yes. Okay. So I'm a horse rider. My mother got us a horse when I was 9, my sister was 13. We lived on a council estate. We lived in a little house. Getting a horse was really not the done thing at the time.
No.
But she got us into a really good school. God bless her, she lied to say we were going to be moving next to the school. And so we got in. I was the only person in my year at my school that went to that school. So had to make new friends, and everyone else went to the local school. So, yeah, she probably had ideas about her station, but it did us well, definitely. So the horses have always been there. And Connemara is known for its Connemara ponies, which are most amazing horses. So hence my logo is a horse's head. Now, the name came about slightly differently. When I tried to register it, I wanted my my nan's name, actually, which was Ruby, and tried to get different versions of that. But there are lots of Ruby companies registered at Companies House, and I spent days looking and trying to find something that would be suitable and couldn't. Now, at the time, I was seeing a young gentleman from South Africa who was setting up his own business with his father, and just asked him, what are you calling your company? And he was, or his family were originally from Ireland.
Right.
Connemara is a beautiful natural area in the west coast of Ireland, where Galway is, all around that area. It's stunning. And that's where his family had originally been from. So he was naming it Connemara SA. So I said, okay, let's try Connemara UK, see what's there. And it was clear, it was fine. Then I find out more about the Connemara ponies. And then I find out that it's also famous for a black fishing fly. Now, what was interesting was this young gentleman had taught me to fly fish.
Oh.
So I'd always course fished, and I actually did my Duke of Edinburgh Awards on night fishing. So I used to go night fishing when I was 10, 11, 12 with my dad, and catching all these fish. And some of them we'd bring back and put in our pond. I had a huge 4-pound tench that used to bomb around my pond and scare all the other fish. But yeah, he taught me to fly fish. So I had a pair of waders in the cupboard, and we'd done this. And my first time I caught a beautiful 6-pound rainbow trout. So there's a great photo of me with this rainbow trout, my waders on. And that's what it was famous for. So it's like, this is meant to be. Horses, fly fishing, the link. I did a bit more research, and there is a training and development company in South Africa called Connemara as well. So that obviously I don't work in South Africa in any way, shape or form. No. So there wasn't a link there, and thought, no, this is perfect. This is obviously meant to be. So that's where the name came from. So it didn't mean anything to me to start with, but as I looked more and more into it, there were so many links. I thought, yeah, let's go with this. And that's been it now for over 14 years.
Fabulous. Sounds amazing. Yeah, really, really good. So we're going to talk a little bit more about your business.
Yeah.
And so share with us, because running your own business isn't always plain sailing. Although listening to your story, you are doing extremely well, of course. But what have been some of the challenges in your journey of running your own business? And then also share some of the highlights as well.
Yes, challenges. That is a difficult one for me, actually, because I don't really see challenges. I just see this is something that I need to work through.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of what would stand out as a challenge. I suppose the recession coming.
Yeah.
But we'd already been planning for it for about 18 months beforehand.
Yeah.
There were signs. We knew it was going to come. I'd worked in recruitment during the recession at 91 to 93.
Yeah.
So I'd already been through that process where there literally was no work, and how to work through that as a consultant.
Yes.
So running my own business, for me then, it's okay, we know it's coming. What's plan A? What's plan B? What's plan C and what's plan D? And luckily, we only got to plan C.
Yeah.
So it's that contingency, I suppose. And that's the issue. When you are going to come across challenges, they're going to be there. So you might as well start thinking about, well, what's the potential? What could possibly happen here? And therefore, if it does, what's my overall plan going to be? Or what's some thoughts? What could I do now that might help that and actually minimize it? So that's always been in my thought processes. So I don't see it as a challenge. I just see it as another opportunity or another obstacle to work through. And of course, if there's no business in the UK, that's when we looked at Europe and said, okay, so Germany's still doing really well.
Yes.
They have recruitment companies there. They need training and development. Let's look at companies that are not going to be affected by this.
Yeah.
There's always businesses as well that are recession proof. So a year or so beforehand, you can start building the relationship with those, knowing that if it does all go downhill, then you've got business there that's going to carry on and keep you going through.
And who gave you that advice, or did you just instinctively know how to do this?
I wouldn't say instinctively. I'd say this is backed from being a manager at Blue Arrow. We were always looking at the marketplace. We always did market research every month. We did quarterly business plans and annual business plans. And in that, we would do things like a PESL analysis. So political, economical, sociological, technological, legislative, and environmental. So we'd look at what's going on for our local area, because a lot of the time, I mean, Kent, admittedly, we had a 50-mile radius, but we'd look at what's happening here, and then what's happening UK-wide, and then what's happening worldwide.
Yeah.
So those events, it's then about having the opportunity to discuss them through, and, okay, it's probably going to go one of two ways, so what are our two options here? If it goes this way, what are we going to do if it goes that way? So that was always in the thought process, and we were always looking for that. And also, training and recruitment are the two things that go pretty quickly. So we get the heads up before anyone else when there's a recession coming, because people stop recruiting and they stop paying for training.
Yeah.
So you know that's happening. But what's great is the recruitment industry then comes out of the recession usually at least a year, if not 18 months, before everyone else.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they start getting business, and it might be on temporary or contract people, and that really goes up, it won't necessarily be on permanent placements, because people haven't got the confidence yet to make sure that they want to commit to that. But certainly temporary and contract will start growing quite quickly as soon as things start moving. Mm. And that then builds the confidence, and obviously people come out again. So we probably, it helps that we do get that indicator before everyone else. But again, it's just about doing your research.
Sure, sure. Oh, fantastic. And then, okay, share some of the highlights then.
Okay, well, the reason for the business was the work-life balance. So that highlight, the fact that I had that opportunity to spend all that time with my daughter, I could take her away during her holidays. We travelled the world together as well. So she got the opportunity to see lots of different cultures and different places in the world. I think I added it up when she was about 10, and she'd already been to 27 countries, something along those lines. Yeah, so she has that, and that's one of my real pleasures in life. So last year, she organised with her partner a trip to Bali and East Java and the Gili Islands, places I'd never even heard of, some of them.
Yeah.
She climbed a mountain that was a sulfur volcano in the middle of the night, all these things, because she just wants to keep exploring. So that was last year. I now want to follow her and go, right, you do the research and then I'll go to the places that you've been to. So I've got to get to Bali now and to Ubud and those places, which I'll do on one of my trips to Australia.
Yeah.
This year it's Ecuador, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, all that Central America.
Yeah.
I've done the Inca Trail, I've done Peru, but I haven't really done that Central America bit at all. So I'm really looking forward to her exploits there and what picture she comes back with and stories. And then again, I can follow that in a year or two and do some of that. So she's 18 and doing all this travel, and I love it. So I think that, because that was the purpose of the business, to make sure that I could spend time with her. And I have to say it, we've never had a real argument. I mean, she's a teenage girl. It's been me and her. I can't think of a time where we really had an argument and raised our voices at each other. So I have an amazing relationship with her.
Wow.
Love her to bits. And she is just beautiful inside and out. So that's got to be the highlight for me. If you're going to set up a work-life balance business, then make sure that you really focus on the things that are important to you.
Yeah. Oh, amazing, Angela. That sounds fantastic. Well done to you both. That's really amazing. So, okay. So where are you going to take the business? Or are you happy with how it is today?
I always have a 10-year plan. Talk about planning. So saying that, it's eight at the moment. So I've got 3 years while she's at university that I am just going to enjoy myself and travel the world. So that's the plan as it stands at the moment. So I just picked cities that I hadn't been to, or I have only visited once or twice and really wanted to explore a little bit more. So last summer, this is actually all through LinkedIn, good old LinkedIn. The Christmas 2015, I started connecting with people in cities that I wanted to go to.
Yeah.
Over a period of a couple of months, I've built up 500 contacts in those locations. And the ones that actually came back to me and were interested in what I do or made a comment, I then moved forward with. And last summer, I did 4 weeks. I went to Dubai, Melbourne, Sydney, Auckland in New Zealand, Singapore and Hong Kong. So they were my 6 cities. And I did something like 25 to 30 meetings, traveling around. That was my summer, and had a wonderful time and started building relationships there. So I now travel every 6 weeks. I either go north to Hong Kong and Singapore through Dubai and back again, or I go south to Australia. New Zealand, I haven't picked up on that much. This is going to sound awful to people in New Zealand, but I went to Auckland in their midwinter. It was 10 degrees. It was raining. It was grey. It reminded me of Watford 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm on the other side of the world here. Do I really want to be going to Watford 30 years ago?
No.
So I will. I've got a lot of business in Australia at the moment, so that's sort of taking up my time. I will get back to New Zealand, but I will go to other places.
Well, like I have been to New Zealand, and it was gorgeous. It was April time, around this time of the year, and it was their autumn, but it was dry. There was no rain. It was warm, cold at night. The temperature did drop a bit in that that autumn time, but it was just, it does remind you of the United Kingdom. There's no question about it. But it's my favourite country on the planet, New Zealand.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yes. No, I know. My auntie and uncle emigrated there 50 years ago. So they're in Napier, which apparently is beautiful, very Art Deco, because of an earthquake actually flattened it in the 1920s. So they had to rebuild. So I definitely have got to get there and explore a little bit more. So that will be on the cards. So
it's on the list.
So that's the plan for the next 3 years. I'm going to be doing APAC from them. And because it is my company and I get to organize the flights and when I'm going, I make sure I have time in every city to do a little bit of the touristy stuff. So I've walked across the Sydney Harbour Bridge at night. I've been to the Big Buddha in Hong Kong. You can actually go from Hong Kong now. You can go to China for 72 hours without a visa, which was great to know. So I could nip in, did Beijing, did the Forbidden City, did the Great Wall and Tiananmen Square. And then you're out again. As long as you're out within 72 hours, then it's fine. And it was so quick getting through as well. There's one little table to the left of the visa place. So if anyone's going there, head to the little table with the one lady sitting on it. There's no signs until you get past her and it's behind you. And you can get your entry visa there literally if you're just going to be there for a couple of days. So that was perfect.
Yeah.
So things like that. Lots of exhibitions I go to. I love art. So I've done a few exhibitions. I did a Degas exhibition in Melbourne. And they had brought together, I believe it was 204 Degas from 90 different collectors around the world, all to the one place. And I did a tour there and it was so amazing. So those type of things you just don't normally get to do. And actually, I got to go to the Australian Open in January because a client cancelled a meeting. So straight away, I was down to the ticket office, got tickets to the tennis and got to see Andy Murray and Venus Williams on the first day there. So that was perfect. And combined it with a Banksy exhibition. I mean, you can't get this stuff everywhere. So take advantage while you're there. So I'm off again in a couple of weeks. I haven't done the Sydney Opera House yet. So that's got on the list for this time. I need to look up who's on, what's going on. Oh, I did Guns N' Roses in February in Singapore. Again, just taking advantage of a situation. A client, wasn't even a client. I'd spent 20 minutes talking to him in Singapore. He rang me the next day, said, I can't go tonight. I've got a free ticket. The gig's in 3 hours. Do you want the ticket? So I said, yes. Oh, he said, I'm in the office. Come and get it and you can go. So that was great. So I went and picked the ticket up, got in a taxi, said, can you take me to this place? It was an hour drive away. I didn't even know where it was. But luckily, Singapore taxi is so cheap.
Yeah.
I turn up, 75,000 people at Guns N' Roses. They'd all reformed. It was the original lineup in Singapore. Amazing. Really, really enjoyed it. Axl Rose, his voice was fantastic. They did 2.5 hours. I was so impressed. But you just think, okay, that's today. What am I doing tomorrow?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Sounds amazing. You are having a whale of a time.
I am. Yeah. So highlights wise, I've got loads.
Loads.
I don't have any lowlights in life. No, I just have highlights. So 3 years I've got. I'm going to do APAC for two, and then I'm going to look at the United States as well. I think trying to do the both at the same time, the timings will kill me.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm just working in the East, and I've got a good 2 years. I think I can do quite a bit of work in that time. And then we'll look at the United States further.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for sharing that. And then the last question is about the people that are listening, right? Share Your Story podcast is aimed at aspiring business owners, the ones that are stuck in a job, that are unhappy, that have a dream about running their own business, but they can't quite have the courage to do it. But they want to listen to people like you and to get inspired. So your story is perfect. But if you had just one, and I know you'll have a list of loads, but if you had one bit of advice that you would give those aspiring business owners, what advice would that be, Angela?
I guess it's commitment to the cause. It's if you're going to do it, then go for it. Don't do it half-heartedly. Go for it. Now, a lot of the time people don't know what they don't know because it's going to be new for them and they don't appreciate the difficulties. So there is so much help out there. Make sure you utilize things like this, the podcast, but also all the blog posts that talk about it. The government has grants and support and will help you with mentors as well to help you set up your business. Think about who was your best boss and how do you want to emulate them and talk to them about how they did it. So gather that information. So before you make the decision to do it yourself, do your research and make sure that you've got enough information to really commit to it and go for it. So don't do it half-heartedly. Make sure that you are going to actually really look into the information and get all the support that is available to you, because people will be willing to help.
Brilliant. I love that. I totally love that. So if people wanted to get in touch with you and connect with you on social media or find your website, share with us, where can they find you, Angela?
I do a lot of work through LinkedIn and I don't pay for it. Thank you, LinkedIn. So probably on there. So Angela Cripps, you'll find me on there. My Twitter handle for my company is @ConnamaraUK. My website, I don't use my website a lot, actually. I got it done for free by a lady that I used to go to school with that I still haven't seen for 25 years. But she was happy to do that. Her company did it and she was willing to do that. So there we go. Talk about asking people for help. And I just put it on Facebook. Does anyone know that can do a website? She went, I'll do it. We're not that busy this week. I can do it for you this week. And I got that for free. And I just sent them a huge basket of goodies to say thank you, because they wouldn't take payment. But it's there just to represent me, to say, yes, I'm real. Yes, I am a person, as it were. But yeah. But it's not really how I use my business. But that's www.connamarauk.com.
Yeah.
And then Facebook as well. So Connamara UK. Luckily, it's quite an unusual name. And therefore, I got all of the domains and everything. It was nice and easy.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, all of those details are going to be in the show notes anywhere, so people can look at those and find you, connect with you, share their stories, and maybe you can inspire them a bit more as well.
Yeah, happy to help. I call myself an advocate. If I can share some information, give a bit of advice, if I've got a document that you want to use that I've got already, then I give it away. I write podcasts mostly for our industry, but they do relate to others as well. So there's about 100 blogs,
yes,
that I've written.
Yeah.
And again, I give away hints and tips and information on them. It's all about being able to utilize the detail to make yourself better.
Well, Angela, thank you so much for your time today. I've really, really enjoyed it. And hopefully we will meet in person one day as well. But
I'm sure we will.
We wish you, I'm wishing you a really fantastic trip to Australia for your next leg and next leg of your journey. It sounds amazing. Well done to everything that you've created for yourself. And the amazing job that you're doing is helping and training other people too as well. So thank you for coming on the podcast, and hopefully we'll see each other very soon.
Thank you, Michael.
Staying Alive UK. Share your story.